This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
In line with international law. Then I think the government really needs to demonstrate its political will in addressing this very disturbing issue. And this can be done through providing education, but as well providing protection for people who are accused of sorcery and witnesses of sorcery-related killings. Another aspect would be to provide medical and psychosocial treatment for victims of sorcery assaults.
And is it a post-independent act?
Well, it was adopted in 1971, the Sorcery Act, and what we see now is an attempt by the authorities through this reform commission to hold large consultation and have a debate at the national level about sorcery. Now that these consultations have been held and that the conclusion by the commission is that the Sorcery Act should be repealed, we're really calling the authorities to take prompt action and strengthen their legal response to those awful killings.
Finally, how the UN Human Rights Office is helping and dealing on this issue?
Well, we've contacted repeatedly the authorities, offering our technical assistance and raising the issue. Only last year, when the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women was in the country, it was in March last year, she raised as well the issue with the authorities after meeting many people who were explaining the situation on the ground and how many women are accused of sorcery and people using sorcery to deprive them of their rights, but also their land, their property, and this issue are affecting disproportionately widows or women who have no family to protect them.
That was UN Human Rights Agency spokesperson Cecil Paoli speaking with UN Radio's Mamadou Alpha Diallo. And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.
The time is 6:04. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Up next is Labor Radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Oregon Council 75, representing over 25,000 Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities. Protecting worker rights, and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.OregonAFSCME.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day.
Hi, thank you, and welcome to Labor Radio. Tonight's show, we'll talk about the wage theft campaign through Our Oregon and SEIU, as well as what's going on with the Hyatt Hotels. This is Jamie Sorensen with Oregon AFSCME, and with me co-hosting is...
Stephanie Patricio.
And Nick Bob.
All right. So first up is the wage theft campaign. In the studios with us is Jake. Jake, please introduce yourself.
Hi. So as you said, my name is Jake. I work for We Are Oregon, which is a project of the two SEIU locals here, 503 and 49. And thanks for having me.
Sweet. So I just wanted to say hi to all my beautiful labor people out there. We're going to be talking to Jake, who's working on a wage theft campaign through We Are Oregon. Jake, can you give us a little bit of background on We Are Oregon?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, We Are Oregon is a project of the two SEIU locals, 503 and 49.
Okay.
They're kind of coming out of the understanding that the traditional structures of labor organizing or of organizing in the United States has kind of come up in a pretty hard way, right?
Yeah.
We know that union membership is kind of at an all-time low, and a lot of unions and other community organizations are looking at alternative ways to organize the communities and also organize workers into different sorts of structures beyond traditional unions.
Right on, right on. And just to kind of let people out there know, SEIU stands for what?
Right. SEIU is the Service Employees International Union.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So I'm just going to run through and ask some questions. I'm sure and hopefully people out there are familiar with wage theft and the campaigns around it. But what is wage theft?
So the way we define wage theft is we say it's the illegal underpayment or non-payment of wages owed to a worker. And we see that that mostly affects workers that are working in low-wage industries. Mm-hmm. It really gets, people from all industries see it, but it's most strongly affected or affecting people who work in the service industry or construction workers, day laborers, mm-hmm. people that are going to feel it the most because their paychecks are the smallest.
Yeah. So mostly people of color, I'm going to go ahead and assume.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. And what is We Are Oregon doing to fight against wage theft?
So the way that we are organizing to fight against wage theft is we use a community-based direct action model, which is a lot of mumble-jumble words, but what we do is use the power of people in the community to put pressure on employers to compel them to do the right thing, which is to pay the workers what they've owed, mm-hmm. What they've earned, excuse me.
What kind of pressure? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, totally. So I think maybe the best way to do that would be to give an example. So we recently supported a worker who was working in a cafe, and she was fired through a text message. And in her last paycheck, she had about $150 deducted from her paycheck. So a week after that happened, she called us and we organized 40 of our friends to go in there with a letter, our friends and her friends to go in there with a letter and deliver it to the owner demanding that money back. We gave him about a week, and after about a week, he still hadn't responded. So then we started doing actions at the cafe in order to show that we're going to be able to affect this person's business, and it is in the owner's best interest to just come clean and pay the worker what they earned.
That's awesome. And has he done that yet?
Yeah. He snuck that money into her bank account not long after we started doing actions. But it actually did take a couple of public pickets. We had lots of actions outside of that place. But we were able to successfully get her money back.
That's the only way the bosses will listen, if you start hitting them in their pocketbook or making actions more public. Right on. That's cool.
That's right. And that also shows the power of people when they come together for this sort of activity.
Yeah, that's
definitely
right. That's
what
right.
was the deduction for? Did he ever say?
If I remember correctly, those deductions that he made were for the amount of money that he spent to change the locks after she left, which did not happen. The locks didn't actually change. Wow. And for money to cover food that she put out for an event that he asked her to put out. So they were just really false,
ridiculous,
fabricated reasons. Yeah. I was trying to think of other words, but yeah. I don't think I can say them on the radio.
Yeah.
Greed, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. How is fighting wage theft building the fight for organizing low-wage workers?
Well, we've seen that low-wage workers are the most affected by greed, as you mentioned, bosses' greed. But they're also in sectors that are most difficult to organize through traditional union structures. So the way that our model works is we help people develop their campaigns to get their money back, and in that process, they can see the amount of power that they have along with as they're supported by folks in the community. And then the only ask we have of them is that they support other workers who are going through the same struggle or in similar situations. And they're more than inclined, they're inclined to support other workers because they've had that same experience.
Right.
And so people are building affinity through friendships, building new relationships, and wanting to go out and support other people.
Yeah.
Great. Have any of them actually organized with either SEIU, 503, the state workers, or 49, kind of everybody else after these campaigns?
We haven't had anyone organize into SEIU. We have done a couple of campaigns now in conjunction with IWW, which is the Industrial Workers of the World, which actually organizes more in the smaller restaurants, smaller service sectors. And we're sort of developing folks to maybe join the IWW after certain campaigns.
Cool. Nice. Cool.
Okay. So what's the likelihood of winning a wage theft fight using community actions?
Well, I am very happy to say that in our experience, it is 100%.
Good.
I don't know that can go on forever, but yeah. In the 9 months or so that we've been doing this, we haven't lost any campaigns,
awesome.
Which really speaks to the power of doing direct action that's based in the community.
Right on. How long have you been doing work around the wage theft campaign?
We had our first public campaign in May of last year.
Oh, okay.
So it's still sort of new to us, but it's a model that we learned from the Seattle Solidarity Network, which has been implemented in Seattle for years and is going around the country because we've seen that it's so successful.
Yeah, I actually have an organizer, a friend of mine, who has talked about the kind of actions that they take on and how successful they are, you know, just rallying people to go and support physically and be there, you know, to demand these things. So I guess my last question would be, how do people that are experiencing wage theft do anything or take action, fight back?
Well, the first thing that folks can do is give us a call.
Okay.
So we have a wage theft hotline phone number, which I would love to plug on the radio.
Can I get your digits?
It's
now.
That phone number is 503-345-7831. And that's just connected to a cell phone that I may have in my pocket right now. So folks can call and, you know, we can chat about what's happening in your situation in your workplace or a former workplace.
Right on.
But also, we don't hold any kind of special secrets, right? People can do this on their own. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that happen, mm-hmm. you know, as long as people have the tools that they're ready. They can start developing these campaigns on their own because it's not rocket science what we're doing. But we do have a little bit of experience, which would be helpful for people if they haven't done this thing in the past.
Right on.
And Jake, can I ask about how many campaigns have you guys undertaken since this has started in May?
I think that we've supported now about 20 folks. That might be
831. And that's just connected to a cell phone that...
So 20 campaigns, 20, okay.
Yeah, functions. We've done about 20 campaigns in the last 9 months, I would say.
That's really awesome. So you have like 100% winning rate.
Success rate?
Success rate, there you go.
Yeah, so far we have not lost any campaigns.
That's really exciting. That's a new way of organizing workers. So thank you for your work that you're doing.
I wanted to ask you, what was the number again to call?
Yeah, thanks a lot. That phone number is 503-345-7831.
Okay, and do you have an email or like a website really quick that people can go on?
Yeah, people can check out weareoregon.org.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you all for having me.
Well, that's amazing. Thanks, Jake. You're helping out some people that are the most vulnerable, people that work in restaurants and people that need help that don't always have access to legal representation. So that's very admirable. And thank you. And congratulations on the success as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other people that have been vulnerable now, we're going to take a look at the Hyatt Hertz campaign. And I have Floyd from the Chicago Hyatt Regency on the line. Floyd, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening to you. Can you tell us a little bit about the Hyatt Hertz campaign and what's going on in Chicago?
Yes. Well, just so people know, my name is Floyd Holland. I'm an employee at the Hyatt Chicago Regency Hotel, which is the largest hotel actually in the country outside of Vegas. We have 2,019 rooms, and it's actually two towers, east and west. I'm what you call a guest request runner. I take various items to guests, you know, refrigerated towels, shampoo, things of that nature. The boycott that we have exists for the most part because the union proposed that the Hyatt pay the workers retroactive pay and current wages that are equal to what the Hilton and the Sheraton Starwood hotels received 3 years ago when our contract ran out, and we've been without the contract for actually 3.5 years. It ran out in September of 2009. So what we propose was that they pay us retroactive pay and current wages, then we would continue to negotiate on some issues that we feel that are very pertinent to our workers' rights, such as subcontracting jobs, because we like to negotiate in good faith because in the past they've asked us to take their word for it, and we decided that we want it actually in writing, strong subcontracting language in the actual contract.
So
the issues as such is that what we would like to do is by receiving, you know, retroactive pay, it would appease the workers who, you know, grown very frustrated with the negotiations.
And Floyd, can you tell us what's the difference between your wage and what the Hilton gets or did it 3 years ago?
Yes. I don't know exactly what they make, but I know it's like $18 plus an hour. And right now we're making $14.60 an hour if you work in housekeeping. It varies.
Big difference.
By maybe 10 or 20 cent per department. You know, $14.60 in housekeeping. It might be $14.57 if you work in convention services.
And this is like in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Okay. And what kind of work are you concerned about being subcontracted out?
Well, I was going to get to that. What we have is that, like I said, in the past, they told us to take their word. When I first started working at the Hyatt, they give you a tour, orientation tour of the hotel. And one of the things that the human resources point person boasted about was that he said, we have an employee for every room in the hotel. That was one of their mottos. So at that time, it was, like I said, 2019 rooms. Well, in the last 8 to 12 years, we have about 800 employees at the hotel now, max. So they've outsourced 200-plus jobs. And four of the departments that have been hit hard, they outsource all of laundry, which is 60 employees. They outsource concierge, which I don't really have a number for you. Give or take, it could be anywhere from, like, say, 6 to 9 people. They outsourced all the security, and they cut the hours in one of the restaurants from 40 to less than 32 hours. So those employees, a lot of them left because, you know, if you know anything about most labor laws, places, companies, if you're not working 32 hours or less, I mean, excuse me, or more, you're not allowed to get, you know, various benefits such as
health insurance,
healthcare, dental, and, you know, vacation. So those people didn't want to be part-time, so they, you know, they left. So their record shows that, you know, we just can't take their word, you know, handshake and a verbal agreement.
Well, with 2019 rooms, it certainly sounds like they should be able to afford to pay their employees health insurance.
Good point. That's a good point because I'm not sure if you all are familiar with. They have something here called the Crane Business Magazine, and they, you know, they tried originally 2009. They tried to use the economy as an excuse, but the economy, the hotel business, is very robust now. It's bounced back, and they even had an article in the Crane Business Magazine. I think it was 2011, saying they should give the workers at the Hyatt and the Hilton. At that time, in the Sheraton hotel, their wages, because, you know, Chicago, their business is booming. You know,
cost of living's pretty high, too.
Yes.
Definitely. So how can our listeners, how can we help your cause?
Well, what we're trying to get people to do is, by boycotting, you can put pressure on the hotel to bear, and by them losing certain, like, for instance, they've lost Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is a very big group. And what Blue Cross and Blue Shield said, to answer your question, in essence, is they didn't say, hey, we'll never come back. They just said, we won't come back as long as you have labor unrest. So it's not that, I mean, it's like a double-edged catch-22 situation where people say, why are you boycotting against yourself? We're just trying to get their attention from a labor standpoint to realize that, hey, we've always taken care of groups like Blue Cross, Blue Shield, American Medical Association, American Bar Association, Electronic Show.
And Floyd, can I ask really quick, are we boycotting, are you asking for a boycott of all Hyatt hotels or just the non-union hotels?
Well, it's the Chicago Hyatt Regency, Chicago McCormick, Park Hyatt, and O'Hara. We do have some hotels that, I'm glad you asked, that do have a labor agreement, such as, say, the Hyatt Rosemont. But we have hotels in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Hawaii, and Chicago, who are actually the main hotels that we're targeting. And it also, in some places, I'll be honest, it has spread out. It's global now.
And do you guys have like a website where a consumer like myself could kind of figure that out of who's got a labor agreement in place and who does not?
Yes, you asked that as well. it's called HyattHurts.org.
Hurts is in pain, H-U-R-T-S?
Excuse me?
So that's Hyatt, HyattHurts.org?
Yes, Hurts.
Okay.
.org, yes.
Great. All right, I think we're going to transition now. Thank you, Floyd. If you can hang on the line, we've got Kathy Youngblood as well, who is a worker at the Hyatt Hotel as well. Kathy, are you there?
Well, I sure am, and thank you for letting me be a part of this program tonight.
Kathy, thank you very much for being a part of the program. Can you tell us about your experience with Hyatt Hurts?
Well, I sure can. Well, I am Kathy Youngblood, and I am a housekeeper at the Hyatt Ondaz in West Hollywood, California. And we're involved now in a campaign called Someone Like Me.
Mm-hmm.
And let me explain about the campaign. This campaign came about, before I was a housekeeper, I was an auto worker. And one year at General Motors, they decided to close our plant, deny our benefits. So I got me a plane ticket, and I went to Detroit to the annual stockholders meeting, and I talked directly to the board of directors of General Motors.
That's
and
really
at that
impressive.
Time, the CEO was Roger Smith, and I invited him to talk to our workers at my plant in Ohio, but as a result, he kept that plant open 5 more years past its shutdown date.
Good for you.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so, see, things can happen when you take that extraordinary step, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And as you may know, as with most places of employment in the United States, Hyatt has a lot of problems, a lot of internal problems. But we believe that we can work, move Hyatt in a new direction. And what we are doing is we are calling on Hyatt to add the 13th member to their board of directors, someone like me or one of my coworkers. Now, you may say, why? Well, Hyatt's board is made up of people who don't work in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we housekeepers and other hotel workers, we know how the hotel works. We are successful at it, and Hyatt is still making money.
Right, and you're there every day, so you know what's going on in the hotel.
We know what's going on, and we have, we're just bursting at the seams with ideas that we think we should share with the board of directors and try and make our workplace safer. If we could have the proper tools and equipment to do our job, and if we could have more time to clean the rooms properly, things like that. We workers today, we think that it's going to take someone like me to direct work in conjunction with the board of directors to bring about the change that we need to see. We want Hyatt to be successful. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all, this is our chosen field. And right. We have so many loyal people that have been there for years, but it's time for the board of directors to listen to workers like me, someone like me or my coworkers. We are women of color, we're immigrants, mm-hmm. and we work hard. And we should be respected and also listened to.
So, Kathy, I imagine you probably have a lot of common sense changes that could happen on the day-to-day operations in these hotels. What can we do to support you or follow your campaign to try to get on that board?
Oh, well, definitely tap into Facebook at HyattHurts.org, and also we have a Twitter site. It's called HyattHurts. But another thing is talk directly to your business acquaintances, your professional acquaintances, your coworkers, your families. And this is just basically a simple idea, but it's like common sense meets corporate sense. And what worker hasn't said, gee, if the board would listen to me or I have all these ideas, and if I ran this company, it would be a better or different workplace. I mean, I can identify with a common worker in the United States, and I think all the workers in the United States can identify with us housekeepers.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, I've got a question for you. You mentioned the time restraints that they put on you for cleaning room. What kind of restraints do they give the housekeeping staff?
Well, different hotels run differently, but then I get they all run the same, meaning Every day you're assigned a number of rooms to get done. Well, sometimes workers only have 20 to 30 minutes to finish rooms. Now, these rooms could be anywhere from small rooms to large suites.
Mm-hmm.
So because you don't have enough time to properly clean each room, you rush and go so fast, and that leads to accidents and injuries that it doesn't have to happen that way.
Right, and when I stay at a hotel, I like to think that extra time has gone into the cleaning. I always tip my housekeeper, by the way.
20%?
Oh, thank you so much.
Uh-huh. And I just think that also goes to show that you care more. You're asking for actual less rooms during the course of your shift, which would actually mean less tip income. That just shows that you care as a worker, the quality that you put into the hotel. So thank you for that. And I'd like to know how we can help out with your campaign.
Well, you can help out with our campaign by helping to spread the word and just talk about the Someone Like Me campaign. And that's really what we want, is someone like me, a hotel worker, on the board of directors, because we really, really think that this would be such an advantage to improve the overall operation of the Hyatt Hotels. It's real simple. It's a new idea in the United States, because in the European Union, specifically countries like Germany, this process is called co-determination, where workers actually sit on the board of directors or worker council meetings, and they and the board decide together the best way to improve and keep safe the working operations in the hotel. So in the United States, this is a new idea, but the Someone Like Me campaign, we think that the Hyatt should give us a try now, this year.
Well, thank you very much, Kathy. Thanks for being a part of Labor Radio.
And
that's
you,
all
Floyd.
The time that we have.
Well, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right. So just remember, if you want to support these Hyatt workers, go to HyattHertz.org with their Facebook or their Twitter page, as well as the Oregon Theft Campaign. Call their hotline at 503-345-7831. There's a couple of other exciting things going on here in the Portland area, so I want to introduce those as well. On February 20th, there's the Faith Labor Breakfast hosted by Jobs with Justice. Cost is only $10. Starts at 7:15 in the morning. I know that's a little bit early, but it is a breakfast after all. This will be at St. Philip's Parish at 2408 Southeast 16th Avenue in Portland. So anybody from the labor community or faith community or just at large who want to support either or, there are a lot of things in common that we have with faith and labor. So please come out and support the breakfast. There's also the paid sick days hearing in the Portland City Council from 2 to 5 o'clock on February 27th. So if you can attend, if you're interested in getting paid sick days throughout the city of Portland, people who work day to day need to have the opportunity to take that sick time and not hand you your food when they're running a fever and coughing, mm-hmm. sneezing, that sort of thing. Last thing I want to introduce, March 17th, the Postal Workers Rally, 2 to 3:30 Pioneer Courthouse Square. If you can attend, that would be fabulous, in support of keeping our postal service 6 days a week. Most important for work that I do, I definitely rely on the post office to have timely deliveries, as well as Portland Troublemaker School, Saturday, April 13th, 9 to 5 p.m., with a social happy hour to follow. This will be at 16021 Northeast Airport Way. Registration cost is just $10. So that's what's going on here in the Portland labor community.
And I'm going to be at that Troublemakers School, Jamie, so you probably didn't know that about me.
Uh-oh, you want to meet Nick. There you go. Well, thank you so much. That's all for us at Labor Radio.
KBOO is proud to sponsor two special Black History events at Portland State University on Thursday, February 21st, featuring East Coast MC, educator, and community organizer Hassan Salam. First is a multimedia presentation on the history of Black music titled From Spiritual to Hip Hop. This will take place at noon at the Smith Memorial Union on the second floor. The second event is a hip hop show with local progressive artists Sirens Echo and March 4th. This will happen at 7 p.m. at the Food for Thought Cafe in the basement of Smith Memorial Union. That's two special events with Hassan Salam in celebration of Black History Month on Thursday, February 21st, at Portland State University. More information can be found at kbu.fm/Hassan2013.
The time is 6:31, and you're listening to KBOO 90.7, Portland, Oregon. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information is at ubc156.org. And up next is Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. With me tonight are Louise Bouchard of Voices Set Free and Lisa Swart. Thank you for being here. Welcome.
Nice to be with you.
Thank you for asking us.
So we're going to talk about incarcerating battered women. Louise, tell us a little bit about yourself and Voices Set Free.
Voices Set Free is the title of the book that I co-wrote in 1986 regarding women who have found themselves, as a result of domestic violence, sitting in prison cells. I am a social worker. I've worked for years with domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. I have my MSW, and it led me into these situations where I found women who were doing such long sentences, many of them life sentences. Voices Set Free came to light in Oregon when I started teaching at Portland State, and we made it a nonprofit, tax-exempt. We serve families who are justice-involved, primarily women, who have experienced